It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal: to help you score more fantasy points.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Take Talk Podcast. My name is Stephen O'Rourke, and with me today is recurring guest, friend of the podcast, Chris Wecht, as Brett is swamped with draft stuff and, you know, his on-the-clock podcast. He needed a week off from this. And Chris is welcome back after becoming a father. Chris, welcome back for the first show since that, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back, getting back in the swing of football things, as it's now a year-round sport. There's no breaks. Feels like no. You get that, like, you get like a week or two. I had basically the 2 weeks after my son was born, right after the Super Bowl. And now they got the combine this week. Free agency comes right after that. And then it's draft stuff all the way up until the draft. And then the summer is a little quiet, but then training camp and everything ramps up and we're back in the season again.
Yeah. It never ends. It's a blessing and a curse, especially when it comes to, like you said, stuff like that, like having kids and doing different things like that. It's so hard to step away because it's just so much is happening constantly.
Yeah, the NFL has figured out how to be in the news cycle year round, 24/7, and they're very good at it. So yeah, I'm still catching up on a lot of these guys. I've started to look at some of these prospects. We're probably going to talk combine stuff with that being this week and just kind of overall landscape stuff. Probably we won't get like as deep into prospects as Brett is getting. Plus you'll be able to get all of Brett's thoughts on the clock and his prospect guide when that comes out. So you'll have plenty of prospect stuff as we get up to the draft here.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, outside of the combine, early news this week, the Chiefs are planning on tagging Legarius Sneed and the Bengals tagging T. Higgins. Those are like, you know, two of the big free agents that are kind of coming off the board. And, you know, I'm sure some other tags will get thrown in throughout the way. But I feel like Legarius Sneed and T. Higgins are interesting because both of them are such high performers at their position, at a position for both of these teams that, you know, you could argue that they could move on from them and work in and, you know, whether it be a rookie or, you know, a lower cost free agent, just because, you know, the Chiefs are so bolstered at cornerback and the way they develop guys, and same with the Bengals and receivers, they seem to develop and churn out, you know, good receivers pretty frequently. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think both teams end up sticking with those guys, or do you think it's a tag and trade, which has kind of been talked about with Sneed already a little bit?
Yeah. Sneed is the one that I actually think makes less sense for that. I mean, he's, I think, so integral to the way that defense plays right now. Yeah. And just, I mean, really became, man, he was probably a top three corner this year. I mean, he followed guys like best receivers around. I'm struggling to think of guys that I would say, yes, they're definitely better than he was this year. And with the way the Chiefs offense is built right now, their defense is really their strength. And so barring cap issues, I don't really see a reason that the Chiefs should want to move on from Sneed. And I think Sneed probably, you know, he probably wants a long-term deal, but he also probably knows this is the best spot he could possibly be in. Like, yeah, I know he doesn't play on offense with Mahomes, but the team will just automatically always be good in some fashion. And that is generally going to help you make money in the NFL if you're on a good team. So I actually think that makes more sense for him to stay, but the Chiefs have not been shy about moving on from guys kind of, you know, before we think they're ready to, like Tyreek Hill. They've done it with their tackles in the past, and really I wouldn't say many of them have really worked out for them, but they're definitely not shy on moving away from guys that are getting too expensive.
And it's interesting just because, you know, both Chris Jones and Sneed are coming up at the same time, and, you know, how much does that hamstring them for the future if they bring them both on? But, you know, like you said, you wonder how much being in a winning environment and knowing you're going to be there every year influences them to want to stay there as best as they can.
And Snead's not like Chris Jones is a lot older. Like I get Chris Jones wanting to be like, I want to cash in because it's probably his last time to do so. Snead's he's probably, if he's smart, he probably could get like two contracts out of teams and continues to play at a high level.
Yeah. And with he's the interesting one too.
Yeah.
Or he is probably the more interesting case just because of, you know, what the Bengals have coming up with their cap work and everything and how much does he fit into that plan?
Yeah, that's the one I don't see how. I mean, I thought T. Higgins was definitely going to be gone. I just didn't see how they could make the money work where they have T. Higgins, Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase all under big, massive contracts.
Yeah.
And, you know, T. Higgins is definitely a very good player. I don't know. It's hard to judge how much of a difference maker he is when he's got Ja'Marr Chase playing opposite him almost always. But when Chase has missed time, T has played very well.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. He always just feels to me kind of like – he almost feels like Adam Thielen already in, like, in his career. Like, yeah, he's like, good. He has really good games, but just never feels like that's the guy that's making the difference on your teams. Like, Thielen had Diggs, and then he had Jefferson – and then we see him go to Carolina and yeah, he pops up for a little bit there with Bryce Young, but then it kind of like fizzles out really quick.
And yeah, like, you know, similar to Thielen with having him as your number one and having, you know, presumably guys who are lesser than him below him, you know, how well can your passing game perform that way? Cause yeah, like you said, Thielen did have a solid year with Bryce Young, but the passing offense as a whole was, you know, horrific. And there's obviously a lot of different reasons to that, but I can see like the concern would be there where it's like, okay, if you throw T. Higgins as your number one, having him matched up against, you know, the better corners that you're going against, how much can you trust the rest of your guys to help create the space that's needed for him? Cause you know, can he win like a Ja'Marr Chase wins where it's automatic, no matter the matchup, no matter the week.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, he feels like a little bit of a trap to a team that is going to pay him. We just don't see these big wide receivers be as dominant as they used to be in the NFL. Yeah. Like, you know, Andre Johnson and Calvin Johnson and Mike Evans is like the perfect guy that still is dominating as a big guy.
Yeah.
But guys like T. Higgins, Michael Pittman, who's also a free agent, I think.
Yeah.
They give off the vibes that they're not these alpha dominant, you know, want to pay them top 10 receiver money in the league kind of guys.
Right. Yeah. Let's jump into Combine because I think that you had kind of mentioned pre-show and it is a big talking point, you know, leading up this week is just the amount of guys that are sitting out, you know, most of the workouts, all of the workouts and just kind of attending the combine just in general and not there to work out. And, you know, what does that mean for a prospect and even for the, you know, from a scouting standpoint, what does it mean when you can't get those numbers on these guys, you know, at the combine?
Yeah, I think it's really an interesting trend that we're seeing, and I suspect we'll see it more and more, particularly with the, you know, the top guys. There's so much more for them to lose than there is to gain once they are, you know, propped up as the top guys at their positions.
Yeah.
What could Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, what can they do to make them go higher than they already are going to go?
I mean, yeah, probably nothing, because at this point, the only thing that's going to push anyone above anyone is what either style of play or what they see on tape. It's not, you know, unless, I don't know, Jaden Daniels went out and ran a 4.2 at the combine. Like, I guess what would there be that would even convince a team one guy's better than the other or like reverse their opinion on a guy?
Right. Yeah. And then same thing for Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. Like nobody's putting any other receiver above them, and I don't think anything can happen at the combine that would make them lose their spots as the top two guys. And with the, you know, you still have your pro day if you want to do all these drills, and you can do it right in an environment you're comfortable in, where you can set, you know, you can set the stage of what you want to do and what you don't want to do, how you want to do it, who's throwing you the ball. Is a that's always a huge thing, is most of these receivers have never caught balls from the QBs that are throwing to them, and vice versa, the QBs haven't thrown to these guys. So what you why would you put yourself in that situation?
Yeah, there's just too many variables for things to go wrong. And I, you know, it just, like you said, creates this environment where the only thing that's going to happen is for you to move down the board. You know, for a lot of the mid-level guys, lower guys, if they pop off on, you know, certain explosive numbers, things like that, that can jump them up the board. But, you know, with these top prospects, you know, especially like at a receiver's position, you expect them to have those explosive numbers. And so if they hit them, it's like, okay, you're confirming what we hoped and what we wanted. And if you don't hit them, then all of a sudden all these other question marks pop up, and, you know, people start looking at tape differently, and everything can start to go sideways and move you down the board. So there's just like no benefit to even doing any of this.
Yeah. So if this continues to be a trend, do you think, like, what do you think the future of the combine looks like? Because really, people are coming, in terms of the public watching, they're coming to watch the best guys be there. They're not coming to watch, I don't know, pick your random, like, round four is, you know, whatever receiver that's going to go in the fourth round. Like, that's not who people are tuning into the combine to see. NFL, you know, obviously still gets some benefit out of it, but
of course,
I don't know. I feel like the combine, what we know of the NFL combine, might change. As you know, not right away, but as years go on, and it's not this let's get everyone to work out in their underwear type thing and all the guys are there. Maybe it's more of like a, with the way you can do things virtually now, I'm not even sure like if it's justifies like getting guys together for meetings and stuff. Like, you can do all that virtually if you wanted to. Like, it almost feels like it's more gathering for teams to get together. Like, this is when we get a lot of leaks of what's going to happen in free agency or trades or draft pick trades. Like, it almost feels like it's more that than it is about the prospects.
Yeah. And even with the prospects, I feel like most of it is just the in-person meetings, teams wanting to talk to these guys, you know, for the first time for a lot of these guys. And, you know, it's all wanting to get in front of them, you know, while it's a high stress environment, you know, guys are nervous, trying to perform, things like that, and try to, you know, really suss out who they are as a person and that, you know, however long they get with those prospects. So, you know, I think it's become a spectacle, and I wonder if it kind of reverts back to what it used to be before, you know, a lot of the media attention, if it becomes more of this like bastion of safety for, you know, all league people, like the team scouts and things like that, where it becomes kind of more of a, you know, just a closed off thing where it is the focus of interviewing and getting the lesser known, you know, smaller name guys, getting numbers on them and going from doing it that way, instead of having it be this massive media, you know, similar to the Senior Bowl type experience where everybody's trying to get there as quickly and as often, or, you know, for as long as they can to try to observe all these guys.
Yeah, these all-star games like the Senior Bowl, the Shrine Bowl, they seem to almost have like a way better setup. Like, you're actually seeing guys in some level of pads. It's not, you know, full equipment always, but you're getting them just doing drills against each other. Like, it does feel like teams are going to continue to prioritize those like practices and seeing guys in those environments than they are at the combine doing these very specialized drills that you can literally train for. Like, guys can literally train to run a football dash really well or run the three cone really well, but not actually be good at football in any way.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's, you know, you can hire coaches that, you know, specifically do this. And that's what a lot of these college kids, a lot of these, you know, potential pro athletes do, is the minute the college season is over, you're contacting a coach and getting in touch with a combine coach who's teaching you how to do the correct, like, you know, in the 40-yard dash, they go off of first movement. And so it's all about, like, getting yourself ready, hiding, you know, kind of hiding your arm. And, you know, it's all technique and trying to game the system, as, you know, as it is with any other test in the world. It's all about, you know, what's the best and easy, you know, best and quickest way you can get by to make yourself look the best. And I do wonder, and I think you're seeing it already, like you said, of more of a pivot to the focus being on those all-star games. And even if there's, you know, the potential for different ones to pop up as, you know, as the, I think the focus of the combine starts to dwindle a little bit.
Yeah, you still aren't going to get the elite guys to do these all-star games because, again, right, there's nothing for them to lose a game. But there's definitely guys that, I mean, Brett will tell you he's basically picked out a receiver from the Senior Bowl practices every year that nobody talked about. It was right. Cooper Kupp originally, Christian Watson, Puka was last year.
Yeah,
I think Ricky Pershall is this guy this year from Florida.
Yeah,
these are the events that give us a lot of insight into these prospects that can become late first, second round, third day two picks.
Right.
That go later, that have something to gain. And it makes so much more sense in those formats than it does having these specialized drill. Like the bench press is like so stupid. Like what is a guy benching 225, like 15 times tell us about anything? Not much at all of his football skill.
Right. If anything, it's just an interesting test of endurance for a lot of those guys. And, you know, like you said, these guys already, you know, the top guys, at least they already don't play in, at least most of them don't play in these, in the All-Star games, Senior Bowl, East-West Shrine. And, you know, none of them are at the East-West Shrine, but, and then like, they already don't participate in the combine. So it's not like we're missing out on anything that we haven't been missing out on already.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the tape from their college days is what's most important. That's what teams are making the decision. Now, you don't want to see Troy Franklin run a 6 second 40. That would be bad.
Right.
The only thing these drills matter for are on the extremes. Do you run super fast? Do you run super slow? Are you super weak in the bench press? Are you super slow in the three cone? Whatever it is, the only thing that matters is the extremes. If you're anywhere like in the around average, like that's all that, like, then you're fine.
And even that now, with especially the 40, because there's, you know, for years now the debate about the 40 is, you know, how functional is it? You know, how often is a guy really sprinting in straight line in 40 yards? And what, you know, what do you glean from it that's actually useful? And even it'll be interesting to see where that goes, because now you're starting to get, and it's been, you're starting to get GPS data from in the games, yep, from when they're from in college. And, you know, there was already talk about those numbers coming out earlier this week. And, you know, that's a much better gauge of what a guy is on the field, because you're actually getting functional speed and in pads in real time against competition, doing what they're going to be doing on the field. And, you know, how much are we actually going to look at the 40 here in the next 5 years as we get more advanced into the GPS data? And even, you know, I'm sure we'll get to the point where we're able to kind of track change of direction speeds and different things like that, where you can simulate it, find situations in game and get the right times there. And, you know, how many of these drills will potentially become obsolete just because of the advanced data and the tracking numbers that we're able to get nowadays that we weren't able to get even 5 years ago?
Yeah. At some point they're going to have to put guys in pads to run the 40. Like that just seems right, like a no-brainer way of making it at least a little bit more accurate in terms of how fast guys are. All right, so that's kind of our general thoughts about the combine. Don't get overly excited or overly concerned about any one guy's performance at it. It's not the end of the world. It's probably changing in the next 10 years. It'll probably not look the same as we have what we know of the combine is today. So we already mentioned it. Jaden Daniels is not throwing. Drake May is not throwing. Caleb Williams is not throwing.
Yeah.
So that leaves, you know, the top QBs that are participating as of right now, anyway, are JJ McCarthy from Michigan. You have Bo Nix from Oregon, Michael Penix from Washington. Those are probably the top three that like have first round buzz. Is there anyone else you think?
From the quarterbacks? No, I think it taps out of there, because then the next guy would be Spencer Rattler and
or Joe Milton, maybe.
Milton's an interesting one. That's a fun take to talk about that we can get into after this, but I think it's Nix, Penix, and McCarthy is like that next tier of three guys after those top three guys that aren't participating.
So I think McCarthy has a lot to gain. I know Brett is super high on McCarthy. I mean, his problem throughout this entire process is going to be that he was on such a good team. And
yeah,
how much did he have to really do? Like, what can we project his performance in college on Michigan to playing in the NFL, where things probably won't be set up as nicely as they were for him in Michigan?
Yeah.
He had the best running back in this class on his team. He had they were a top two defense in college football last year, at least between Georgia and even Alabama at stretches, but mostly Georgia and Michigan were the top two defenses. So McCarthy definitely has probably the most to gain, I feel like, out of all these guys. Penix, I think, can gain a lot in meetings and showing that he's got the IQ to play and not such a college style offense, and that his skills can translate to the NFL.
Yeah.
And I mean, Bo Nix has just been in college forever, so he's got so much experience. Like, I guess that's probably his big selling point too, is like, look, I've done all these things, and I've had some level of success pretty much no matter what I've been doing. And maybe some team falls in love with that.
Yeah, I think JJ for sure, the combine week is massive for him, because I think 40 time is going to influence a lot of people. I think he's going to run an impressive 40, and that's going to open up some people's eyes, because while I think a lot of people, you know, most people understand that he has the mobility to him, I think that just because he plays in such a pretty staunch pro style offense behind a very, very good offensive line with good weapons, you didn't have to see him outside of the pocket super often. And so I think that the 40, he'll surprise the people there. And then just the throwing, I think, you know, people will be excited to see his arm strength live in person and, you know, the different types of throws that he can make. And so I think, you know, he could really probably jump himself. I think this week is probably the week that he jumps himself into the territory that Brett has been kind of foreshadowing the last couple of weeks of, you know, him potentially jumping into, you know, QB2 and, you know, for him QB1, but to the point where some people are at least talking themselves into it, and you start to, you know, question picking him over Drake May or even Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. You probably watched a lot more McCarthy being here in Michigan and whatnot. Do you think he can have any, so this was Anthony Richardson's like breakout party last year too, with his, where he showed off how athletic he is. I'm guessing McCarthy is not as athletic as Richardson in terms of like being just an absolute freak, but like what, like, is it 75% of that? Is it 80%? Is it just 50%? Like, what do you think the level of jump and showing off his athleticism could be for him?
So you mean like Joe? All right.
How much of a jump? Yeah. How much of a jump could McCarthy get from showing off his athleticism Richardson did last year? Like, is there any chance he has that level of jump where Richardson immediately became a top three pick?
I think there's a chance for it. I don't think it's as straightforward as it was for Richardson, but I think there's a chance for it just because so many teams are looking for that athletic quarterback. And, you know, obviously all three of those guys at the top of the list are too, but I think that it'll put him up below Jaden Daniels, where I think that he'll be considered probably the second most athletic quarterback in this class. I think that'll jump him up to that point, and that's where people will start looking at him as a top, you know, potential top three QB in this class.
Nice. Any other later QBs that you're interested in seeing do anything at the combine? You mentioned Rattler. There's Joe Milton, Michael Pratt from Tulane. Any of these guys?
Rattler, I'm interested to watch just because I think that he's a guy that a lot of different teams could fall in love with later as taking a third round flyer on the guy. I think that he's one of those that I'd be interested to watch just to see what his athleticism comes at. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of interviews just because he's had such an interesting career through college. I think it'll be exciting to see, you know, what teams kind of perceive him as going into the draft. And then, I mean, Milton will be exciting just because he's got a cannon and he is an athletic freak, but I still, you know, I think that there will be maybe a team or two that will potentially talk themselves into giving him a legitimate chance at something. But I think he probably goes more the way of like a Malik Willis at the end of the day, where it's all the talk about his athleticism, but there's so much, he's so raw in what he's doing. And, you know, he's raw playing in some of the easier systems outside of when he was at Michigan, and he struggled, you know, really, really a lot at Michigan early in his career. After that, he went into some very, you know, pretty simple offenses, Tennessee. We talked about it with Hendon Hooker. And I think that he'll probably just go the way of a lot of other athletic quarterbacks, where it's a lot of mental that I don't know if it's there for a guy like him, especially because he's been in college for so long.
You know, we all remember the Malik Willis deep bomb to, I forget who the receiver was at the combine. And then there was, was it Trubisky years ago that basically did the same thing?
Yeah. And I think Joe Milton very easily could do the same exact thing, where he unleashes a 70-yard bomb and his name jumps up the board a little bit because he'll have that. And then he'll probably run like a 4.6, 4.5 or even lower. And then that's where, you know, the buzz will happen. It happens every year with some guy who kind of blows it out of the water with numbers. And I think it'll be that with him. It's just that he doesn't have that, you know, the pedigree of plays on film that you see from like an Anthony Richardson with someone with like that athletic profile.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Any running backs, things, questions you want to see, guys you're interested in? We've got the top guys, Blake Corum, Braylon Allen from Wisconsin. I know people really like the Kentucky guy, Ray Davis.
Trey Benson is getting a lot of,
yep,
you know, a lot of buzz the last couple of weeks. I feel like as a lot of guys start to dig into tape, I'm seeing Trey Benson's name pop up a lot for people. And then the new one this week that I've seen quite a bit is, Will Shipley from Clemson is another one that people are starting to like because of his versatility in the pass game. Running backs, I'm just interested to watch the class as a whole, just because it doesn't seem like there's this, you know, there isn't like a clear top guy. There isn't a guy that probably is going in the first round. And so it's, running back classes like this, I think, are really interesting because it then becomes, you know, what's the flavor of running back you're looking for, where now it's, you know, instead of having a couple guys that are, you know, first round guys like a Jahmyr Gibbs, a Bijan Robinson, who you're drafting to be like close to your complete back. With drafts like this, I think that so many teams now are looking for what specific role can you fill. And so I'm interested to see, you know, some of the testing numbers on these guys, and if there's, you know, some of the like super fast guys that get, you know, plugged in as the, you know, scat back out of the backfield type guy. And, you know, just, I'm interested. I just am interested to see what overall becomes the, you know, the different tiers of who guys are, as far as like, if they're a pure runner, more of a third down guy, more of a power guy, and just, yeah, interested to see how that all plays out.
If I'm wrong, but I don't think there's this like the Devon Achane or Deuce Vaughn of this class. There's not like a guys that are really small,
yeah,
that also are getting hyped up a bit. And like, are we going to see a team take a small guy or not? I'm pretty sure there's not like a guy in the 195 weight range this year that also has like a lot of hype around them.
Yeah, I guess Blake Corum would be the closest thing to that. So, I mean, he's 5'8". I don't know. He's 5'8", but he's over 200 pounds. So he's, you know,
right. Yeah.
He's more of like a muscle hamster than he is like you said, the Deuce Vaughn or the Achane, where, you know, they're 180 pounds soaking wet. It's just, it doesn't feel like a very diverse running back class. It doesn't feel like it has it doesn't have the excitement of like a lot of some of the recent running back classes. But I think that you'll see, as you always do, a couple of functional guys pop out of this class that end up contributing in some way, shape, or form. And I think that like this is a class where it's going to be a lot of the guys that can be used as receiving threats that end up, you know, making out more from this class than anything else.
Yeah. I was actually just looking through the weigh-ins from the Senior Bowl just to see what guys weighed in there. And nobody is under, the lowest weight they have is Rashawn Ali at 204. Everyone else is higher. The highest weight they have is Ray Davis at 220, and he's 5'8". So he's got like that Blake Corum build as well. Because I think Corum's like 215 and 5'8".
Yeah.
So yeah, it feels very much like guys are very much in that like 205 to 215 ish range for the most part, and around 5'8 to 5'9 ish.
Yeah, so, and that's where builds. That's where guys who pop, if there are any guys that pop in the 40 that like, you know, run a number that kind of blows it out of the water, run like a low 4.4, high 4.3, that's where you could start to see some names move up the board if you have a couple guys that outperform like that, just because there is such a, you know, everybody just, it feels all status quo where everyone's just a different version of one guy. And so like, I think the 40 will be one of those things where certain guys are able to separate themselves and other guys are, you know, start to question because of lack of speed.
I just feel a little bit like that Malik Willis QB class where there's not a like clear number one or even a clear number two.
Yeah.
Like Corum is probably the favorite, but he doesn't exactly pop like anything close to like what Bijan did or Jonathan Taylor in the past,
right?
Some of these other running backs. So definitely feels like I don't think any of these guys go in the first round. And I wonder if we see any of them slide because they all kind of feel like, yeah, they're good, but they're just like different version of X guy.
Right. Like, you know, yeah. How long do they make it? Like, you know, does it make it all the way to the third before a running back is taken? Cause everybody kind of sits on the, like, well, we have our guy, but we also have a guy behind him that we like. And so like, we don't want to be the ones that, you know, break the seal, so to say, on the running backs. Cause like, I feel like with a position like that, nobody wants to be wrong or miss out on the guy that ends up doing well. And so just out of fear of being that person that picks wrong, it's just like a waiting game of who's going to do it first, who's going to break the seal first and go after one guy. So then the dominoes can start to fall from there.
I don't know how many times John Harbaugh can pass on taking Blake Corum though. So that feels like it's going to happen at some point.
Harbaugh already came out and said that we need more than two running backs. So I think that a running back is inbound to Baltimore in some way, shape, or form. And this feels like a Baltimore running back draft where
I was talking Chargers.
Corley. Oh, charge. Oh, that. Oh, yeah. That I forgot. I forgot which one's which, Jim and John. But yeah, that. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, the Ravens also desperately need a running back.
Right. Yeah. I think both Harbaughs, I think. But yeah, Corum. Gosh, the Chargers need a running back really bad too. He might be the one to do it. The Chargers might be the ones to go running back first, and it's just because Harbaugh wants to get Corum in the building.
Yeah, there's no way that John Harbaugh thinks he can run the offense he wants to run without a above average running back.
Yeah.
Does not seem like a committee guy to me at all. All right. Receivers. So Neighbors is going to sit a lot of stuff out. Marvin Harrison Jr. as well. I think everyone else is currently participating that I'm aware of. So that leaves like the top guy that's participating is probably Rome Odunze from Washington.
Yeah.
Jalen McMillan from Washington is up there too. Keelan Coleman from Florida State, Troy Flanken from Oregon. That's probably your main group. I don't know if I miss Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, both from Texas. They'll be up there. O'Brien Thompson from LSU.
Yeah.
A lot of good receivers. Yeah.
I mean, yep. I feel like we say it every year, the last probably four years now, where every year it's like this is the deepest wide receiver class we've seen in years. But I think this is the deepest wide receiver class we've seen in years. And I don't know if
it has the star power as well.
Yeah, it
as
does.
The depth, which is not, has not, was not true last year for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Who are you looking out for most in the receivers as far as, you know, combine work? Who's the guy that you expect to make a jump or expect to even drop off, but just interested to see who your guys are.
So Troy Flanken is definitely interesting because he was very much a like deep threat for Oregon.
Yeah.
Him showing off just running crisp routes, like when they do all the different route tree stuff, will be good for him. I think if he can show that he does that, obviously if he runs fast, that will be good. That's good for, I know people will say that the 40 time doesn't matter for receivers, but it matters for the NFL team. Like, we just see it every year that guys,
yeah,
if the guys run fast, they will go higher than you think they will.
Yeah.
What's his name, the guy from that the Patriots took, is like the prime example of that a few years ago, that hasn't done anything.
Thornton.
Yes. Yeah.
From Tyquan
Baylor. Yeah, Tyquan. Yep. Thornton from Baylor, and he ran like crazy fast. Running fast in the 40 matters for the receivers. Not because it means they'll be good in the NFL, but it's good for their draft stock.
Yeah.
So Franklin's definitely interesting in showing that he's more than just a deep threat. Xavier Leggett from South Carolina is a guy that I've gone back and forth on because he kind of fits, like we were talking earlier about T. Higgins, the like bigger contested catch type guy. And if he doesn't show that he's got athleticism to him, I think that could be really bad for him. I think teams will be afraid if he doesn't run, if he runs like real, we're talking extremes here, like really slow, or he doesn't have good hip mobility when he's doing the three cone and stuff like that. The routes don't look crisp.
Yep.
This is an event for him where it could be really good for him because he could show that he can do all those things, but it also could be really bad for him because he doesn't look as crisp with as all these other guys that we think are very good.
Yeah, he's like he's right there in the probably like late second, early third projected right now. If he can run decent numbers, I think you could see him jump into the mid second round. And this
it's just how do you fit them all? How do you fit all these guys into?
That's the thing, is it's such a deep position. It'll be interesting to see how, like, again, it. Will it be that, you know, teams have these guys rated like vastly differently across the board, and, you know, we see some guys go higher than we think and some guys later than we think. It just feels like receiver has the chance for one of the guys that everybody has projected as a first rounder to drop just because you know, again, picking a guy that you feel fits your system better, or picking a guy because you like his, you know, his attitude, his character, whatever, better, and just having some guy slip through the cracks that, you know, maybe one team had rated higher and but they went after someone else, and then this it just there's just so many good ones. I mean, I'm looking at CBS. I just have CBS pulled up right now, and even in the top 60, there's, you know, 2, 4, 6, almost 13, 14 receivers. That's like a quarter of the top. Yeah. That's like a quarter of the top 60 prospects. It's just, you know, is it just going to be too many to where, you know, some of these guys are just going to fall off, and it's not their fault. And we see a lot of late round guys, you know, kind of pop up as contributors just because they probably should have been drafted a little bit higher.
Yeah, I think outside of the top three in Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Rome Odunze, anyone else could slip a little bit because of what you just mentioned and being so many guys. And you're exactly right that there is 100% going to be third and fourth round receivers that surprise us this year because they just got drafted in the right system for them and they are a talented receiver.
Right.
We don't know who they'll be yet, but that's going to happen.
Yeah. Like, I think, you know, I think even Brett has put out like a couple names of guys like that, that could turn into that. Like a guy like Jermaine Burton, Devontae Walker is another one that's getting a lot of talk. Jamari Thrash is popping up a lot more. His name showing up more, and just a lot of, like, you know, just these late round guys that have a very specific skill set that probably would be rated a little bit higher in different wide receiver classes, but there's just so many that they can't, you know, they're a little almost like too hyper specific that they can't move up to where there's, you know, probably four or five guys that you would argue are more complete receivers and that you can plug and play into any system.
Exactly. So yeah, looking through the list of receivers, like, there, almost every single name on this list, if you told me they went in the second round on draft day, I'd go, okay, it makes sense. Like, it would not surprise me at all.
Right.
So lastly, we have tight ends. This, I mean, for all the good receivers that are in this class, this is a brutal tight end class outside of probably the best tight end prospects since, like, Kyle Pitts. In Brock Bowers from Georgia. But yeah. after Bowers, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need a tight end this year.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, but yeah, Bowers is the obvious one. And then even I think, like, a lot of teams are going to like Jatavion Sanders. He's another one that I think will get a lot of buzz just because he is a functional pass catcher and is built for modern offenses and what teams are asking tight ends to do. After that, I think Theo Johnson's an interesting name, and, you know, I think Cade Stover's another interesting name that I think can be functional in the NFL. But yeah, there's, just looking at it, you've got five tight ends in the top one, or four tight ends in the top 100 at best. Yeah. And even that's probably pushing it. It's just not a deep position. And, you know, even Brock Bowers, I think he's a super interesting use case in this just because he has been so uber productive through his entire college career. And he's already billed to be this pass catcher of, like, how is he going to be valued in the draft overall? Where's he going to go? Cause I mean, you see mocks that, you know, have him being taken as high as 6, 7, and then some that have him last as late as into the 20s. There's just so much variance on where he can be taken and what even, like, you know, all the draft experts and even teams think he projects to be.
Yeah, there's a very real world where we see Bauer. I think Bowers is definitely a lock to go in the first round.
Yeah, I think so too.
But then we easily could not see another tight end. This isn't super likely, but I wouldn't also surprise me if we don't see another tight end until day three come off the board. There'll probably be a, like you said, a Sanders, some of these other guys going round three. I don't None of these guys really scream round two to me, especially with the receiver depth. Because once the receivers start to go, teams are going to get a little itchy and want to make sure they get the guy that fits their system. Like the Rams taking Puka, that just was like such a perfect match. Like, teams are going to not want to let that guy go unless they think they have multiple of them. But I just don't see how we see really any second round tight ends and very few third round tight ends go off this year.
Yeah, it's just like you said, and I don't think there's not any complete tight ends. So a lot of teams, I feel like, draft tight ends to be pass catchers to contribute in the offense. And why go after that when you can get any flavor of receiver that you want?
So that being said, though, that this is probably a big combine for all of these guys. They all are going to get a shot to raise their draft stock because there's just such a meh class around them.
Yeah. Again, I think that if any guy pops off in any of the explosive metrics that, comes as a surprise, you could see them jump and fill the void that is, in between probably after Sanders, of like making it, it's probably a play for the third tight end in this class of like who can stand out and push themselves up into like the third round to be taken after Sanders. But other than that, there's not really a chance of anybody jumping up any higher than that.
Would you rather draft Johnny Wilson from Florida State to play tight end, or any of these tight ends minus Brock Bowers?
Gosh, probably not. Probably Johnny Wilson.
For those that don't know, Johnny Wilson he at the Senior Bowl, he weighed in at 6'6", 237. So he basically could play tight end in the NFL.
Yeah, just let me bump him down, give him a little lesson on run blocking and deploy him that way.
Exactly, yeah, because he's got some good hands. Like, he can definitely catch the ball.
Yeah, and if he can, if he can test well, at least run decent numbers, that's the best. Right. That's like best case scenario for a tight end as it is. Haven't put on 20 pounds. You've got him, right there, he's right in the weight, right in the weight range of like a Cade Stover, Brock Bowers, except he's got 2 inches on him, so he can carry the weight a little bit better.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if he put on 20 pounds, that would put him, he'd like Theo Johnson. Him and Theo Johnson would be basically identical.
Yeah.
And he's probably got his better hands.
Yeah, right. I would argue so.
I think that wraps up our pre-combine coverage. I'm sure Brett will be back next week and have a lot to say about all the combine stuff and all of the prospect stuff he's been doing. And he's, make sure you're also listening to On the Clock is really the premier place where you'll hear all this stuff. You guys will probably preview free agency, which starts next week. Like we said, a lot of football going on all the time right now.
Yeah. And Brett's prospect guide should be coming out soon. I know it's on the horizon. And then, he's got On the Clock loaded with guests, all people who are like, experts in the field, experts in the industry. So I definitely like that's, daily listening for me.
Cool. All right. Let's get out of here.
Yep. Thank you for listening, everyone. Subscribe, download. We appreciate it. All right, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.